You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week one of our new series, This Is Us, the heartbeat of Mid-Current Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
A little over 6 years ago, Mid-Current Church, that you were all a part of right now, it was just a dream. It was just a picture in my head. It was just a picture in my wife Erica's head. And so one of the very first things that you do when you're starting a new church, or really when you're starting any organization for that matter, is you got to determine that organization's mission statement and its vision statement. It's one of the first things you got to do. And we knew in our hearts, we knew what we wanted Mid-Current to be all about, but it was still hard to put on paper and to put into words something that did not exist yet, something that you couldn't actually point someone to, or something that nobody could experience in any way. It's hard to put mission and vision onto a piece of paper. Truthfully, no matter what industry you are in, or no matter what stage of life or what stage of development your organization is in, mission and vision are tricky. Okay? A lot of times people don't understand the difference between the two. They're kind of just thrown all around. They're used interchangeably. Purpose statements are thrown into the mix along with all these other kind of we exist to statements, right? And a lot of times these mission statements, they just don't really end up saying anything really at all. In fact, this week I stumbled across some doozy mission statements, and here's one from the Museum of Modern Art. I got nothing against the Museum of Modern Art, but here was their mission statement: to collect, preserve, study, exhibit, and stimulate appreciation for and advance knowledge of works of art that collectively represent the broadest spectrum of human achievement at the highest level of quality, all in the service of the public and in accordance with the highest professional standards. What does that even mean? I mean, it sounds really impressive, but what does that even mean? Here's another one. This is from Volvo, the car company. And I got nothing against Volvo. They're Swedish cars, which means you know they're good. Anything Swedish is. And so with a name like Volvo or like Sten Carlson, you can trust that it's going to be good, okay? That's not the point. Here's an old mission statement from Volvo. By creating value for our customers, we create value for our shareholders. We use our expertise to create transport-related products and services of superior quality, safety, and environmental care for demanding customers in selected segments. We work with energy, passion, and respect for the individual. Huh? I mean, you lost me at shareholder. I mean, I don't even know what a shareholder is. I mean, in theory I do, but I couldn't like really tell you how you become one or what you do when you are one. And on top of that, here's the real problem with this deal. I'm not sure if my segment is a selected segment or not. I'm not sure. I don't know what that means, okay? The moral of the story is this. Mission and vision statements, I don't know. Just mission and vision in general, they can be confusing. And truthfully, churches sometimes are the worst culprits. Too many churches, they have these mission and vision statements. They're filled with a bunch of true, a bunch of good and flowery sounding things that all put together don't really actually mean anything at all. Too many church mission statements sound like this. I made it up, but unfortunately it's not that far off than what you read sometimes. Too many church mission statements sound a little something like this. We exist to glorify God as a worshiping community, fierce Jesus-loving people by reaching up, reaching out, and reaching in to receive and extend God's extravagant gift of love and forgiveness made possible by the grace through faith in Jesus Christ our Lord, whose blood was shed for the sins of the world both now and forever. Whew. It's like, what does that mean? It's all true. It's all great stuff, but man, what does that even mean when you wrap it all up and put it together? Okay, here's the deal. I don't want us to get confused here about mission and vision in general and about mission and vision at Mid-Current. I don't want us to get confused about the two, which is why we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about this in this new message series. And so the best way that I could explain the two, I don't want us to be confused. The best way that I can explain the two, mission and vision, is this. When it comes to church, and this is really all that I can speak about, this is where I have devoted myself to in my, you know, my professional world. When it comes to church, mission comes straight from the lips of Jesus. Jesus gave all Jesus followers and all faith communities, he gave the mission in Matthew chapter 28 and what we call the Great Commission. Here's what he said to his disciples. He said, go and make disciples of all the nations and teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. That's the mission, right? For every single Jesus following, Christian church on every street corner here in Hudson and from sea to shining sea, that's the mission. That's the target that we're all shooting for. We're all on the same team trying to make that happen. And so a church's mission statement they put on their building or on their website, right? A church's mission statement should be some short, some sweet, some memorable version of that. There's, quite honestly, there's not a whole lot of creativity necessary. Jesus gave us the mission. And so here at Midcurrent, here's how we communicate it, that we exist to reach more people for Jesus and to teach people to live more like him. That's what we're about, right? We want to reach more people. That's the go and make disciples part. As long as we got friends and neighbors and baristas that don't know Jesus, then we still got work to do, right? We still got a mission to be a part of. And we want to teach all people then to live more like Jesus. That's the go and teach them to obey all those things. That's our mission. We want to reach more people for Jesus and teach people to live more like him. Vision. On the other hand, our vision, on the other hand, is where things start to get a little more specific. Okay? A vision, that's the mission. We all got the same mission. A vision is what starts to make Church A just a little bit different than Church B. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I'm not saying that they're in competition. They're not. But they will inevitably be different from one another. They will inevitably fulfill the Great Commission in ways that are unique to them and unique to the way that their heart beats and unique to their giftings and their skills and their people and their community and their little slice of the kingdom. And it takes all kinds of churches with all kinds of God-inspired visions to fulfill the Great Commission. It takes all kinds of churches with God-inspired visions to fill the Great Commission. And so here at Midcurrent, the vision that God put on our hearts, right, that sets us apart, that makes us unique, and that makes us different from some other church is this, and I'm sure you have heard it before. You heard Sam say it today. Our vision is this, to create spaces and opportunities where real people and a real God meet. That's our vision. That's our part of the whole. We want to create spaces and opportunities where real people and a real God meet. That statement at this time in the life of our church is what drives just about every single thing that we do. And so starting today, we are going to put that vision under the microscope so that you know exactly what it means. It is all a part of this series we are calling This Is Us. Over the next month, we want to help you understand how our heart beats. We want to help you understand why we do what we do here and why we do it the way that we do it. We want to help you understand, too, why we may not do some of the things that you might have hoped that we did or some of the things that you expected to see in church or that you'd seen other churches do, too. We want to help you understand why we do what we do and why we sometimes don't do what you might have thought we would do, right? When this series is all over, we are hoping and praying that you will have a better sense of why we plan and why we create and why we design and why we dress and why we talk and why we sing and why we pray and why we worship and why we preach like we do. It's not necessarily the same as other churches, but that's not the point. That's not the goal. We're not trying to be like other churches. If we were just going to try to be the same or do the same thing as every other church did, then there really would have been no point or reason for us to start a new church 6 years ago in the first place. So we're not trying to be like any other church. We're not saying that they're bad, and we're not saying that we're better than them. We're just trying to do our part to fill the big mission, to fill the great commission in a way that we think is helpful, in a way that we think is needed right now in the world, or maybe right here in our own community. And so our vision of creating spaces for real people and a real God to meet, it really has three main components that I want to break down for us. I've been trying to do this with our staff so that we're all on the same page. There's really three main components to that vision of ours, right? Here's the idea. We want to focus on real people. That's part number one. We also want to focus on a real God. That's part number two. And then if we come all the way over here, this is part number three. We want to focus our efforts on this idea of there being a meeting place. Three main components. That's our vision, creating spaces and opportunities for real people and for a real God to meet. That's the three parts: real people, a real God, and the idea of a meeting place. If we are doing something, or if we are not doing something that you thought we might do or that you hoped we would do, or if we ask you to do something as a volunteer on one of our ministry teams, it is most likely because we are trying to do something intended to specifically fill one of these buckets. Maybe not all at the same time. Maybe all at the same time, but maybe one at a time, or maybe two of the three at once. If we're doing something, or if we're not doing something, it's most likely because we're trying to fill one of these buckets. It's most likely because we're trying to highlight either our invitation to real people, to highlight our belief in a very real God, or to highlight or to communicate something about the place or the opportunity that we spent a lot of time designing for the two to meet. And so today, right, that's the vision, that's the three components, that's the three buckets that we're trying to fill with everything that we do here. And today what I want to do is I want to take time to talk more about the very first of these components, real people. I want to talk about what that means. See, I want to do everything that I can. We want to do everything that we can to help real, normal, everyday people like you and me understand that you can have a real heart for God. Dudes especially, this is something that I really care about. Somehow, I don't know how this happened, somehow the church, the Big C Church over time has successfully convinced men that somehow you gotta like check your man card at the front door when you're gonna walk in the doors of a church, right? Men seem to have gotten this idea that you can't be a real dude and have a real heart for God. Somehow it's like, well, these are two mutually exclusive things. Can't be a real dude and have a real heart for God. You gotta pick one or the other. That's so unfortunate that that's the message that we've sent, right? And I feel the same way, whether it was for men or for women or for young or old, kids, teenagers, adults, breaks my heart when we think it's mutually exclusive concepts to be real everyday people and have real hearts for God. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart when the church or when Christians send the message, either intentionally or most often it's just unintentional and unknowingly. It breaks my heart when Christians or when churches send the message that church or that faith or that spirituality, it's really only for a certain kind of person only. It's really, a lot of times it's unintentionally and unknowingly, Christians and church, we send the message that church really is meant for church people. It's meant for perfect people. It's meant for only the really religious people, only the really righteous people. It's only for the people who really got it all together. It's really for the people whose lives, quite frankly, are kind of messy Monday through Saturday, but on Sunday they dress the whole family up and they look real good so that nobody thinks anything otherwise. We've gotten this idea that church is for those people. Church is for the church people. Too many people in the world have this idea, yeah, that's not a place for me. I'll never forget, I've told this story before, I'll just tell a shortened version of it today. I'll never forget the coworker that my wife had when the two of us lived in Colorado when we first got married. This guy wasn't a church dude, but we worked at a really great church. We were always trying to invite him to come with us, but he was not having it. One Saturday morning, he was a vendor. He had a little booth at a charity 5K race that we hosted at the church. It wasn't a church deal. We just had the space available to host it. And he was there with his booth. And we invited him inside. We said, you should come take a look. And we invited him into the big worship space. It was a really cool spot. And we thought, man, maybe it would be helpful for him to see. There's a cool place to hang out, man. You can come in here. And so we invited him. This is a Saturday morning. It had nothing to do with church. We invited him to come inside. And he nervously followed us in there. You could tell. And he admitted at one point, just as we were about to step into that worship space, he admitted to us, I think half jokingly, but half very serious. You could tell in his voice. He admitted to us that he was convinced that lightning might strike him the moment he set foot inside. I don't know how, and I don't know why, but somehow people in the world have this idea that God or the church or the faith, it isn't for them. It's not for me. It's really for someone else. It's for all those other, it's for all the church people. And as much as I have observed that is kind of a problem and an issue today, the truth is this isn't a modern day problem. It's not. Even back in Jesus' day, you might be interested to know. Even back in Jesus' day, there was confusion. And there was tension and there was argument about who could be in on this whole God-loving, Jesus-following movement. There's disagreement about who could be in on the whole deal. Here's the thing. God's original, what we know as his chosen people. God's original chosen people were the people of Israel. They were Jewish people. And God established a covenant with his people, a promise and an agreement for the special relationship that they would share, that they would have together. And within that relationship that he established with them, he also established some rules and some laws and some commands and some guidelines for how his people were to remain in that good relationship with him. But when Jesus came to earth, generations later, when Jesus came to earth and when he died for the sins of the world, it changed everything. A relationship with God was no longer based on all of the rules that you obeyed, but it was based on grace through faith in Jesus Christ. And that meant that a good relationship with God was no longer available to Jews only. It meant that a good relationship with God was available to anyone and everyone who put their faith in Jesus. And by the thousands, I love these stories in the book of Acts, by the thousands, so many non-Jewish people, they were known as Gentiles in that day, so many Gentiles began putting their faith in Jesus. They began saying, yeah, I want to follow this guy, Jesus. And all of the Jews, and in particular, I should say, it was all the kind of the priests and the you know, the religious leaders and everything. They're going, well, no, hold on. They're going, hey, all these people, you know, it's all great and everything. Don't get me wrong, but they're going, they can't get in on this. All the religious leaders, that they're going, they haven't followed all the rules that we've been following. They're not doing it right. They're going, they haven't jumped through all the hoops that we've had to jump through. They're going, man, they haven't checked all of the religious boxes that we've checked. They can't get in on this, at least not that easy. And so a big meeting was called. It was called the Council of Jerusalem. A big meeting was called to hash all of this out. And there was disagreement, and there was arguing, and there's finger pointing. And finally, Peter, we know him in the church as the Apostle Peter. Finally, he stood up and he addressed the whole crowd. Here's what he said. He said, brothers, you all know that God chose me from among you some time ago to preach to the Gentiles so that they could hear the good news and believe. God knows people's hearts. And he confirmed that he accepts Gentiles by giving them the Holy Spirit just as he did to us. He made no distinction between us and them, for he cleansed their hearts through faith. So why now, he says, why now are you challenging God by burdening the Gentile believers with a yoke, with a burden that neither we or our ancestors were able to bear? He says, we believe that we are all saved the same way by the undeserved grace of our Lord Jesus. Okay? That was his big speech, but there was a little more discussion, there was a little more disagreement, there was a little more back and forth going, and eventually Peter, he's one of the primary leaders of this whole new Jesus movement. Finally, amidst all of the disagreement and all the tension, all the conflict, he made up his mind about the whole deal. And he came to his final, after hearing everything, he came to his final conclusion on the matter. And I love what he says next. What he says next has become like the theme of my life as a Jesus follower and as a pastor. What he says next to the Jerusalem Council, what he says next, it might be my favorite verse in the whole Bible. And that's a big, bold statement because there's some biggies in there. There's some biggies, right? For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son for us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I could go on. There's some biggies out there. But what Peter says next, it might be my favorite verse of them all. What he says next influences just about everything that we do here at Mid-Current Church. Here's his conclusion about the argument at hand about who this whole deal is for. Here's what he says. He says, "It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God." Let's not make it. I love that. Let's not make it difficult for those people who are turning toward God. Now, make no mistake, just in case you're wondering here, make no mistake, okay? I'm following God is a different deal, right? I'm not saying that following God, that we should, I'm not saying, hey, let's make it easy for people, you know, who are, I'm not saying let's make it easy for people who are following God. Following God is a different deal. It's most likely going to be difficult. That's some hard stuff if we're choosing to follow God and follow after Jesus. We're told to die to ourselves. We're told to pick up our cross and follow him. We're told to resist temptation. We're told to turn from sin. We're told to forgive other people like we have been forgiven. We're told don't copy the patterns and the customs and the behaviors of the world that you see. Just because they did it doesn't mean you can do it. Just because they watched it, they bought it, just because they, doesn't mean you can. Don't copy what they do. That's difficult. I'm not saying let's not make it difficult for those who are following God. I'm saying let's not make it difficult for people who are turning their hearts toward God. I'm saying let's not make it confusing. Let's not make it hard to understand and to engage for real everyday people. I'm saying let's not make it irrelevant or out of touch. Let's not make it unattractive. Let's not make it weird. Let's not make it boring. Let's not make it something that people are going like, what is happening here? I remember one of the questions that we were asked a lot in the first few years of our church, I'd have people ask me all the time, why don't we say the Lord's Prayer? Do we say the Lord's Prayer? Why don't we say the Lord's Prayer? And I got nothing against the Lord's Prayer. It's a great prayer. It is a great, if you're looking for a great guide on how you might pray through your day, that's it. Quite frankly, it might be, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, might be worth me doing a whole series on the Lord's Prayer alone, just for us to see what it is that Jesus is urging us to be praying for. I got nothing against the Lord's Prayer. But I'm just not sure how helpful, how compelling, how inspiring it is for people who are turning to God, or for anyone for that matter. I'm just not sure how helpful, how significant it is to be in a room full of people where practically everyone at the same time, with very little warning or very little words of instructions, all snap into the same trance at the same moment. Everyone just seemed to know exactly what to do, right? Legs stiffened, eyes glazed over, and in unison with the same lifeless monotone voice, everyone began mumbling together, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us day our daily bread, and forgive us sins, we forgive us sins against us." Great prayer, but what's up with that? What in the world is that? Mid-current, I'm saying, let's not make it difficult. Let's not make it hard to understand. Why did this just start happening? Let's not make it difficult for people who are turning their hearts to God. So here's the deal. When it comes to my heart, for real, everyday people, just like you, just like me, just like your friends and neighbors. When it comes to our heart, for real everyday people in the communities in which we live, here's what I want to communicate. When it comes to real people, I want us to be communicating that Christianity is approachable. That the God, that faith, that the spirituality, it's accessible. It's tangible, but you don't gotta be someone special to get in on it. I want us to communicate that it's relatable. You can grab a hold of it. You can get a grip of it if you need to, right? And it doesn't bite. You can come up real close. You could even take a look and try it out for yourself. I'm trying to communicate that this deal that we do, Christianity, spirituality, God, it's accessible to us. It's tangible. It should be, and I want it to be approachable here at this place. Mid-current, let's not make it difficult for people who are turning to God. In my opinion, I don't know about you, if you've been around, you may have a different opinion. That's okay. In my opinion, this is the thing. This is the thing that makes Mid-current maybe most unique. Here's why. Because it's not a given that all churches would have this kind of, you know, this posture. It's not a given that every church would have this kind of like guest-obsessed mentality to say, man, let's not make it difficult for people who are turning to God. It's not a given. But most churches are trying to help people see that God is real, just like we're trying to do. Most churches are trying to create, you know, an inviting meeting place for their church to come together to do their thing, just like we're doing. But it's not a given that a church is gonna work really hard. It's not a given that a church is gonna work tirelessly to make sure that they always have this kind of posture, that what they do and what they say and what they pray and what they preach and what they sing makes sense to real everyday people sitting in the seats. It's far easier. This is why it doesn't happen. It's far easier. And I've been part of churches like this. I got nothing against it. I'm just saying it's far easier to just assume people know. It's far easier to just use big words and pray big prayers and reference people in the Bible and reference stories in the Bible and reference, you know, concepts in the Bible, right? Just assuming that everybody knows what you're talking about, right? To just assume that they know when to stand and when to kneel and when to cross and when to begin mumbling incoherent prayers under their breath. Well, all at the same time with everybody in the same room. It's easier just to assume everybody knows. But I'm learning more and more and more every day. That is just not always the case. And so as long as I got breath in my lungs, as long as y'all still let me be your pastor here, I'll be saying the same thing with everything inside of me. Let's not make it difficult for people who are turning to God. And that's why we do what we do here. That's why we do it the way we do it, because I want us to be the ones to do the hard work. And sometimes it's hard work to translate this whole deal into something that makes sense to the people in the seats. But I want us to be the ones to do the hard work. If someone has to work hard to make sense of it all, what's happening here? What are they doing? What are they saying? If someone's got to do the hard work to make sense of it, it should be us. We'll do the hard work. I don't want to be the church that just, I don't want to be lazy and just, you know, use cliche Christian words and phrases and rituals and traditions and just expect other people to do the mental gymnastics to figure it all out. If someone's got to do mental gymnastics, right, to help people know what we're doing, it should be us. We'll be the ones to translate everything that we're doing into something that makes sense, that's approachable, that's accessible, that's tangible for real everyday people. And that, friends, is what we mean. It's what I mean when I tell you, when we tell you that we want Midcurrent to be a place where real people and a real God meet. That's what we mean when we say that we want this to be a place where real people just like you, just like your friends, just like your neighbors, just like your boss, just like your favorite waiter at San Pedro. It's what we mean when we say we want real people and a real God to meet. I think, in fact, I believe deep down inside of me, I believe that if we can capture someone's attention with what we do and what we say and how we gather and how we sing and how we preach, I believe with everything inside of me, if we can capture someone's attention, God can capture their heart. And so when you connect here, when you engage here, when you invest here, or when you work here, which by the way, we're hiring, that's a shameless plug. If you're a part of things here, you gotta know. You gotta know, man, we're gonna do everything we can to help people see that God is real. We're gonna try to create a place where our community can come together. But you gotta know that on the top of our list is our intent to not make it difficult for you, for your friends, for your neighbors, for your in-laws, for your kids, or for your teenagers. We're saying, above all else, let's not make it difficult for you or anyone else to turn toward God. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for what you are doing here in this place. And God, not even 6 years. You have been so faithful to us, God. That's evident in so many ways. No greater way than to recognize the people that you bring in and out of here. God, the fact we celebrate today, people like Haley and Aaron coming in, God, that's just a small little snippet of the countless numbers of people that you have brought in and out of here in amazing ways, God, to help bring this place to life. And God, I'm so grateful to be a part of a community, to be a part of a church who's doing everything we can. God, we're not saying that we're just trying to make it easy for people to follow after you. We're not saying, it's all good. We're just saying, man, we want to open our doors wide so that it's easy for people to take that first step, to open their heart to you, to turn to you in some capacity. So I give you thanks, God, for a church whose heart beats to do whatever we can to send an invitation to real everyday people, to let them know that you can be a real dude, you can be a real, you know, woman, you can be a real kid, you can be a real life everyday teenager, and you can still have a real heart for God. So God, we thank you for what you're doing here, and we are just praying that you would continue to bless our efforts to roll out that kind of welcome mat here in this place. God, would you bless each new chapter in the life of this church and our effort to connect with real people here in this place. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.